This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Bob Fitrakis in the studio with, of course, my esteemed colleague, Connie Goodell-Newton.
Hello.
And we're in here with Sean Plaskett.
Evening, guys. Good evening.
Good to see you, Sean, the author of Four Seasons, with the cover art by Malcolm J., artist promoted by Free Press, freepress.org, which sponsors this show. And Sean, this looks like a book of poetry.
It is. It is indeed.
You want to tell us a little about why you went into poetry? Why not rap, for example?
Absolutely. It's a very interesting experience of mine, actually. I would say it was completely by mistake. Coming into Ohio State as a freshman, I was looking to participate in...
And how long ago was that? You don't look that old. How long ago was that?
Yeah, I'll be graduating in a couple of weeks now.
Oh, okay.
So that was 4 years ago. I came in as a freshman, and I was looking to participate in the annual African American Heritage Festival that they have in the spring. And as it got closer to the date... I realized I didn't volunteer for anything. I didn't sign up for anything, and I felt bad because I was like, "Man, you know, this is for African American Heritage, and I'm not doing anything." So, I pulled up the information online to see what I could participate in, and I saw the poetry slam, and I was like, "Oh, okay." I've never done any form of poetry, but my teacher said I write pretty well, so I'll just go and try this out. And I was just thinking it was just going to be a one-time deal. I just present something that I've written and that'll just be it. And so I went to, for the audition, and they said that they really liked my poem and that I needed to write 3 original works within the next month for a competition. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a competition. So I did fairly well. I was runner-up in my first ever poetry slam, and it was at that moment where I was like, man, I could really commit this to like a primary hobby of mine. And that's kind of how I got started writing poetry.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you remember your first poem?
At the competition?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually one of the poems in the book.
How do you feel about maybe letting the listeners hear it?
Sure. So this poem is entitled Wife. Wife is in the first section of the book, which is any poem that I've written for or about someone. So this poem actually isn't for anyone in particular, but I kind of wrote it in dedication of what, would be my future wife one day. So this is actually one of the poems, the second poem that I read at the competition. Let me find it real quick. Okay. Wife. When I think of her, my wife-to-be, I like to think that she will be a woman of standard and probably a woman of class and dignity. Pursuance of her will possibly be a very tough task, undoubtedly. Can't swoon her so easily with my grace, my charm, and tranquility. No, you see, to try hard for her to please would indubitably be a vision beyond which I can see till I discover that she is me. Not she is me so literally, but rather more figuratively. A person with whom I can see shares the same background, morals, and deity. Ma chérie, tu es comme les étoiles du ciel. In French, that's my dear, you are like the stars of the sky. No puppy love, no high and by, no mate and date and just let it fly. Only through patience and trust shall we fortify a relationship, both vast and wide. She will be motherly, caring, pleasant to the eye. She will be kind and generous and respected like I. We will commit to maintaining our love till we die, despite any differences we may come by. I will love her like him from the depths of my soul. Wherever one may lead, the other is sure to go. And the day I discover the true love of my life, I'll know I fulfilled my quest in finding my wife.
All right, and again, references to morals, the deity, God, and do you feel that there's sort of a destiny, that there's somebody out there that you're destined to marry?
Absolutely, and that's interesting as well, because Another poem that I've written in the same section of the book is dedicated to the young lady that I'm with right now, Samaya Martin, and that poem is entitled Sunshine.
So you didn't go into poetry, so you could be like a chick magnet. It was for Black Heritage. We want the viewers to get that straight. You went in because you were trying to do something for Black Heritage, and you stumbled into poetry. Mm-hmm. You do it quite well.
Thank you very
but
much.
But also, you wrote about a wife, and now it looks like you have a relationship with someone that might potentially end up being your partner.
Absolutely.
And well, why don't you read that one for us, too? Get a feel for this.
Sure. So this is actually the last poem that I wrote before the book was complete. I tried having an even number of poems in each section, and every section of the book had 7 poems in it except the love and dedications section. So this was the 7th and final poem of that section of the book in order to complete the process of making the book. So again, this poem is entitled Sunshine, which is something that I endearingly call Samaya from time to time. And here it is. It amazes me how there aren't more loves nowadays that begin as friendships. Love interest exists with the bliss of the first date, the first kiss, the first meeting at a party, yet both parties dismiss the possibility of persisting as friends. Instead, they insist on adding to the list of missed opportunities for long-lasting love and decide to confide in a love lie tied only by a loose title, boyfriend, girlfriend, before they ever truly know the other person, personally. That's why I'm glad our love isn't so expendable. Such wasted love is so ephemeral, short-lived and lacking of substance. She is my sustenance, my life and invigoration. We complement each other well beyond imagination. Where one lacks, the other excels, and we propel each other to excellence, always getting better together. Whatever she does, whatever she wears, whatever she says, I need not care. Because her words are gentle and her justice is fair, and she looks great no matter how she wears her hair. It seems unfair to have a woman so fair and beautiful as she. She is my golden prize, and as a blessing, I count her twice. Ever since the first day we met, I knew she was different. Confident, but not arrogant, humble and kind. If someone thought adversely of her, she seemed not to mind. It was clear from the beginning we were a good match indeed, but she was involved with another, and I enjoyed doing me. Nevertheless, we spent more time, and with time grew intrigue. People often mistook us as a couple, she and me. The first dance, the first kiss, the first time we talked over the phone. The connection was sensational. We shared a mind of our own. And as our friendship grew stronger, her relationship began to falter. And from that time on, our lives became altered. She now demands honesty, and tongues are held no more, because little can be said now to make her feel less secure. I adore this young woman of mine, this angel. And I'm kind of sort of halfway really glad she had such a hard time. It changed her for the better, and it took me by surprise when I began to realize how she opened my eyes. For someone who was once a friend was now becoming something more, and neither of us knew what would be in store. It took deep faith to give love a chance, but we took that leap together and found romance. An enhanced love unlike anything we ever felt before, and us being friends at first enhanced it all the more. She's made my life so bright, my biggest star in the sky. I want to show her the world because I see its goodness in her eyes. She's so down to earth, cool, the jewel of my life, a motherly soul, and maybe my future wife. My princess, my queen, a true, true friend, and she's regularly irregular with her tendencies and trends. Light in spirit, the delight of her family and friends, rooted in discipline and respect. I respect that she shows how much people depend on her. She's everyone's MVP and accepts it graciously. In everyone's lives she signs, and I thank God she's mine. Words can't describe how it blows my mind the countless times our minds intertwine. It's gotta be a sign of good things to come, because our hearts and minds are already one, shining together, burning beautiful and bright like the sun.
All right.
Thank you.
She's probably happy with that.
Oh,
was,
I'm happy.
I was going to write a poem about my wife. I just haven't got around to it yet. Maybe some hard analytical prose, but very emotional stuff. So how does it feel to be out there, like, emoting? A lot of men don't do that regularly and do it so well and have such a command of the language. Is it you stumbled on it. Is it something now you aspire to do the rest of your life?
Oh, definitely. I've found that poetry is a good medium for me to kind of tap into that side of my personality. I don't know. I'm a very patient, you know, easygoing type of person, and you know, people generally get that in their, you know, one-on-one interactions with me. But poetry has become a creative way for me to kind of show that in a deeper sense. So yeah, it's nothing for me to, you know, be that sincere and heartfelt and to actually emote the things that, you know, come, you know, from within.
Great. So, I mean, it sounds like you started poetry rather suddenly, mm-hmm. because you were in this competition, and it sounds like it's headed towards, you know, a lifetime hobby or career. I mean, publishing a book at your age is no small feat, so that's really wonderful.
Thank you.
Your book is entitled Four Seasons, mm-hmm. and you've talked about the first section of your book. What are the other three? Is it other three sections of your book?
Yeah, there are three.
And what's the idea of the theme of Four Seasons? What are the seasons, I guess?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I think it'll be best answered if I just, you know, read from the prelude of the book. So I have here that the book Four Seasons is a compilation of poems that reflect the four major kinds of poetry that I write. Derived from four key elements of my personality. My love and appreciation for special people in my life, my sometimes, you know, silly, playful nature, the wisdom I've obtained from vital lessons learned during my life, and, you know, my craftiness and intelligence. So, fittingly, the themes and tones of each of these poems are comparable to the four seasons of the year. So, to start the first section, poems written in dedication of others reflect the love and warmth of spring, and thus is the reason why the section is entitled Love and Dedications. My silly side is captured in the humor section, introducing poems that are, you know, funny, lively, upbeat, much like the jubilant season of summer. The poems that reflect the lessons that I've learned fall in the spiritual life lessons section of the book, analogous to the fall season in which school and learning begin. Mm-hmm. And finally, the book wraps up with the section called The Intellectual, which contains poems that reflect my introspective and insightful nature. And it's befitting of winter, because winter marks the point when people spend their most time indoors,
yeah.
reflecting on the year that's passed.
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
So let's proceed to humor. Is this literally humor? Are these poems the... Are they a reflection of your humor, or just things we see as funny? Why don't you pick one that that you like, and let's get a feel for it.
Sure. The first one that comes to mind is a poem called You a J If. Now, just a little introduction to this this poem. I have a really close friend of mine at Ohio State. His name is Chigo Ikeke. Young man from Atlanta, Georgia. He's been my roommate, my housemate, ever since freshman year. We have a very close relationship. This is a term that he actually came up with along with some of his cousins back home. So I've actually trademarked the term J within the book, and you know, I gave reference to that. And essentially, a J is any derogatory term you can think of that starts with the letter J. So jerk, junkie, jive turkey, if you will. It's a really funny thing that we've been throwing around ever since freshman year. And so this poem I kind of wrote in his honor, thinking of just silly things that might apply to the J's of the world.
And where is your roommate from? What is home for him?
He's from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay,
Atlanta, Georgia. Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so the poem, You a J. J, noun, the living, breathing manifestation of everything wrong in the world. Ignorance, arrogance, shame, pride, stupidity, lucidity, with no audience to confide. The weight of the world is unbearable to weigh with the dead, crippling incompetence of a J. Jerk, junkie, jive, turkey, jester, joker, nerve poker. Jack in the box, just a pain in the ass. Jack of no trades, jovial jackass. J's make me sad and blue, J's make me sick and jade. But J's aren't born into this world, in fact, they're all self-made. With certain exceptions, no reason to come nigh. You a J, such a J, if any of these apply. You a J if you can't read, you a J if you speed. And please wash your hair, only J's got dirty weave. You a J if you're loud, you're a J if you're a pimp. And if you ain't injured, don't walk with a limp. You a J if school's not cool, you're a J if you follow no rules. You're a J if you don't have pride instead of acting like a fool. When it comes to showers, whether hot or cold, you're a dirty, nasty J if you must be told. And please act your age, be it young or old. Like if you're 40, why are you still wearing cornrows? What a J. You're a J if you streak, if you do it uncladly. And you're a J if you get dunked on like Sean Bradley. You're a J if you have no manners or if you chew with an open mouth. If your rims are worth more than your car, and your car more than your house. You a J if you smell like a dump, and if you simply don't bathe. And especially if you're a girl, you're a J if you don't shave. You're a J if your date's at McDonald's, cause you're stingy with your bucks. If you wear do-rags with your suits and Jordans with your tucks. You're a J if you can't tie your shoes, or if you trip down the stairs. You're a J if you steal one shoe and leave the other one there. You're a J, not even a man, if you don't handle your own. Like, how are you at the club with the wife and kids at home? What a J. You a J if you don't know your area code or the capital of your state. Or if you wear PJs and slippers in a public place. You a J if you drink from the carton or get full and still want more. Or do a bunch of flashy moves and still not score. You a J if you're greedy, if you eat more than you weigh. Did you just get kicked out of a all-you-can-eat buffet? What a J. You a J if it's all about you, and never about the team. Or if you don't believe in life on a grander scheme. If you haven't learned anything else, be wary of one thing. This poem has a very important theme. J's are self-made, true, so there's room to be better. Educate yourself and others, and we can liberate J's together.
Okay. The J Liberation Movement.
Yeah.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS. 98.3, 102.1.
Okay. Let's go with another shot at some humor.
Well, I think that's interesting. I know, like, with my friends who've traveled, you know, to different cities, people who are from different cities, they have different insults that they use for people.
Right.
In Columbus, we have, like, the OSU jocks are chaches, but they're bros. So
right,
they're, you know,
right.
So that's just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for bringing that to us.
No problem.
Okay, what do you think? Maybe one more on humor?
Sure. Uh-huh. Let's see what's a good one here. Let's go with purple and black balloons. So the story behind this poem, this was actually after I had, you know, made poetry a primary hobby of mine, and I actually wrote this poem in a poetry workshop, where there was literally a purple balloon and a black balloon sitting on a table, and we had to write a short piece about that. So this is what I came up with. Big black balloon, blow it up, blowing up to the moonshine. It's a crime if to find this potentially divine light bulb sign trying to climb in the sky, if only it had some air to breathe. Just give it some air and it will fare well. Say farewell as it drifts delicately in the atmosphere. But now this sphere must fear reaching heights where it can no longer breathe. It would be okay if it had a companion. A violet co-pilot to soar evermore in the air with no care in the world but to just be there. Little old black balloons waiting for his queen to reach his highness. Violet's gotta bounce like Air Jordan, the air she soars in floating evermore towards him.
All right. Let's move on to another season here.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual life lessons.
Yes, sir.
So, what have you picked up here spiritually? Share some of the insights in your poetry.
Sure. These poems written in this section are actually, they are fan favorites, you can say. Most of the poems that I've performed at venues have primarily come from this section.
Is there any reason for that? Why do you think people prefer this section to the other first two sections we've looked at?
To be honest, I think people appreciate deepness. I think they appreciate when they can gauge a strong sense of the trials and tribulations, unique experiences that kind of shape us into the people that we are. And I feel like when people listen to poetry like that, they either can relate or take something from it that they didn't have before. And so, yes, a lot of people tend to appreciate my poems from this section. So one such poem is it's called Baggage. It's actually a personal favorite of mine as well. So anyone intending to purchase the book, I would definitely say to read up on this poem. So here it is, Baggage. You know, for something that can't clearly be seen, it's amazing how baggage can show on your sleeve. It's a tease. You think the person in front of you is all that you see, and so you realize the darkness behind their eyes, the depths of their fences, pretenses, everyone's a product of their experiences, baggage. Its weight can be daunting, haunting, with effects that show no limit. It'll taunt you and haunt you, flaunt its emotional onslaught. You ought to be wary of how weary and dreary it can make you and those who care. One can't prepare for the world of despair someone's baggage can bring, so instead be aware that every bag has a tag from which you can see the price that was paid for its carriage, baggage. The thing that can end a marriage, it's savage, relentless and tragic. It will ravage the very foundation of which a relationship is built. Constantly having to tear down walls of tears, walls of years of lust and distrust, walls of an appalling past that will send the ceiling falling fast and crash you into the oblivion you're living in, baggage. The one thing you can fit on a plane that's as heavy as a train, a brain crane that drains people of their humanity, its insanity. It causes insane pain to course through your veins and go straight to your heart. It splits you apart before a relationship can even start. I know it doesn't make sense, it's not smart, but it's convenient to be angry and blame, so why complain? Instead, people choose to contain the pain and live in vain. Cain had baggage. That's probably what enabled Cain to go insane and inflict pain upon his own brother and leave him slain. The story of Cain and Abel is like the Bible's baggage fable. Baggage knows no moral, so I'll label the moral to this baggage fable. Everyone has a bag they carry, but no one cares what was done to win it. What matters more is not the bag on your shoulder, but the contents you carry in it. Baggage.
Thank you, thank you. Sean, I was wondering if it seems like a lot of your poems are personal or spiritual. I was wondering what was your most political poem, if you had any, or if you see that in your future, writing political poems, because I think poetry can be a great way to express things and maybe drive home a political message.
Absolutely. I really haven't delved too much into politics in my work, but I can refer to one poem of sorts. So the second year, my second year at Ohio State, that was the second time that I participated in the Poetry Slam during the Heritage Festival. And every year it's different. You know, you have to write new works of poetry. And in this year in particular, they asked if we could prepare a poem that was culturally based. So a lot of what I've learned in terms of my heritage as an African American and kind of the historical significance of how things have changed over time kind of came out in one poem that is in the final section of my book, The Intellectual. So this poem was called Culture. And, it talked a lot about you know, I won't, you know, get into too much detail, but it talked a lot about, you know, the disparity in a lot of different African American families. You know, some families are, you know, single mother households. You have some families where, you know, a lot of people are imprisoned. And, you know, in the poem I made, I talked about the Willie Lynch effect. Willie Lynch being a revolutionary of sorts, you know, centuries ago during the times of slavery, where, you know, he kind of foresaw a lot of the negative effects of slavery and some of the things that black people would be struggling with to this day. So I mentioned things like that and, you know, the effects of the slave trade and all those types of things. So, yeah. Great. Would you like me to read it? Okay.
Sure.
Let's see. Okay, this poem's called Culture. There's much more to our culture than poetry. It's poetry in motion, emotionally devoting our souls to everlasting roles of sacrifice and unconditional love. The love of a mother scorned is a bittersweet feat in this culture of ours. How a woman can look upon a man with such disgust, yet embrace her own son with the warmth of the sun, has only begun to tip the scales of my consternation. And yet there's fascination and sheer appreciation for the sacrificial love of our single mothers. Our culture has a history of family bonds being broken for tokens of the economy, but now they're broken by tokens of misogamy. Nevertheless, the camaraderie with the families we do have is a gift I'm sure many people wish they possessed. I'm obsessed with the strong figures in our community, men and women who've shown immunity to adversity and thirstily obtained success at no rest. Our talents and intelligence have forever been revered with the relevance most imperative to this country's existence. We exist and persist in this society as people with intelligence that's body kinesthetic, athletic, aesthetic, poetic, prophetic of the many forms of God's beauty, because we possess the things people covet, and I love it. And yeah, we were all once kings and queens who owned vast lands, titles, and wondrous things, but when we gave all that up to let freedom ring, all we had left were songs to sing. With songs we sing, with songs we fling our perpetual praises to thee, everlasting King. That's the beauty of our culture, our spirituality. Infallibly undefeated, we need it, we feed it. With our passion and love, believe it, we succeeded. When our country seceded, our sons succeeded our fathers and their fathers, and the sons and daughters of paupers became the mothers and fathers of scholars. We would be not if it were not for God and his undying grace. To love a race that was disgraced for 400 years of tears and suffering, a people who still feel the effects of Jim Crow checks and bottleneck effects that reflect Willie Lynch's thousand-year hex on a culture currently being consumed by inner hatred. We must stop hating. We must stop hating. We must stop hating. Start debating and contemplating on how it is we lost our sense of royalty and loyalty, because it's still there. It's plain to see it. Our culture is vast and rich. You just gotta believe it and seek it.
Great, thank you. So, where can our listeners find your book if they'd like to get a copy of it? Is there a website or where is it available?
Yeah, so I got published through the self-publishing company called Ex Libris. That's Xlibris. So you could most immediately find the book on their website, xlibris.com. But the book will inevitably be available anywhere you could purchase books. So Amazon.com, they've already, you know, pushed the book for sale in the UK. So you can find, you know, Four Seasons available at, you know, Amazon.com.uk. Barnes & Noble, Borders, anywhere that you could possibly find a book, it'll be there.
Great. This is Sean Plaskett with his book Four Seasons.
And Sean's given us the pleasure of referring to that. When you talk about hating, is there a specific thing you had in mind as we wrap up there? What kind of hate should we fight against?
There are a lot of pervasive issues in society nowadays, and they all stem from a lot of different things. Jealousy, just to name one. People just wanting what, you know, other people have. So that's just one thing among others.
Right, that's the last word from Sean Plaskett, author of Four Seasons.
Thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.